call this meeting to order. Ms. Williams, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Eugene Connors?
Here.
Councilmember Joan Hanson?
Here.
Councilmember Shirley Dowdy?
Present.
Mayor Ron Ertley?
Here.
Councilmember Mayor Pro Tem Anna Klein?
Here.
Councilmember Douglas Dunn? Councilmember Serena Sullivan?
Here.
Justin Johnson, City Manager. Nina Williams, Deputy City Clerk. Sharon Bono, Finance Director. Cindy Moss, Personnel Director. Albert Echava, Interim Police Chief. Jack Ernest, Fire Chief. Tom Climate, Public Works Director. City Attorney Britt Hansen.
Thank you very much for the invocation tonight. Let us turn our thoughts to the country of Yemen, where the beginnings of a human disaster is occurring with war, conflict, and a blockade of Yemen. Millions of people are now struggling to survive. So for the innocent people of Yemen who are suffering so much right now, let's have a moment of silence. Thank you. Let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I have no announcements or proclamations tonight. We will go directly to call to the public. So we have a couple of people signed up. We'll start off with Brian Bruce. Call to the public, yeah.
Yeah, there is a pretty hefty buzz in that left speaker right there. Good evening. My name is Ryan Bruce. I'm the executive director of KBRP. Just a very short thing tonight, specifically to this side of the dais, because we've replaced some of the equipment up here. No longer will it sound like an airplane's landing when it gets really hot in here, especially for you, Ms. Klein, since you're sitting right there. As you know, KBRP webcasts all these meetings. We've put a new computer and a new system in to make it easier for anybody to do, so that some of our other staff members can help do this in the future as well. We were somewhat hamstrung by the last system, only in that there was only one or two people who could really adequately operate it. So it also alleviates any delay. There's only about anywhere between a 15 to 20 second delay from what's happening in this room going out on the internet now. And since the new city website has a direct link to KBRP's page to the streaming, I figured it was time to give it that upgrade. So hopefully it will improve the viewer experience. And since I know a lot of people also don't have cable, this is a good opportunity for them to tune in as well. So we just want to thank specifically the clerk's office, Nina and Ashley, who have been really helpful, and Mr. Johnson, who have helped us sort of move this project forward. So onward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan Bruce. We also have Patricia Worth.
Yeah. Good evening. I'm Patricia Worth, and good evening, Honorable Mayor and esteemed council members. I'm here representing Rotary and wanted to just give you some information about the parade. We put in a permit for the 4th of July parade, and we wanted people to know that we have the application for the parade on our website, on Facebook, and also to talk about the flag program that we are getting new members. We're on a membership campaign, and our flag program invites everyone to participate, both people in their homes and in businesses. For an annual fee of $35, members of Bisbee Rotary Club will hang a United States flag at your home or business on various federal holidays, Flag Day and 9/11. We hang the flag early in the morning and remove the flag at the end of the day and store it until the next holiday. Enrollment in this program also includes the mounting of a bracket at your home or business, in order to properly display the flag. So the holidays that it will be displayed are Independence Day, Labor Day, September 11th, Columbus Day, Veterans Day, Martin Luther King, President's Day, Memorial Day, and Flag Day. And your participation in this program will help Bisbee Rotary provide financial support to local charities and to community programs and events. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia Worth. We'll now move to item number one, accounts payable. Do we have a motion?
I move that we pay accounts payable in the amount of $179,283.57.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion, questions? No questions. We have a motion and a second to approve accounts payable in the amount of $179,283.57. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. Next we'll go to item number two, approval of the consent agenda. Items A through H, and I will read them. A, approval of the minutes of the regular session of Mayor and Council held on March the 3rd, 2015 at 7 p.m. B, approval of the minutes of the special session of Mayor and Council held on May the 12th, 2015 at 5:30 p.m. C, approval of the minutes of the work session of Mayor and Council held on May 5th, 2015 at 5:30 p.m. D, approval of the appointment of Donna Pulling to the Community Sustainability Commission with a waiver of number of commissions served. E, approval of a park facility and right-of-way use permit for the Bisbee Rotary Club for the use of Cole Avenue, Bisbee Road, and Arizona Street for the 4th of July parade on Saturday, July the 4th, 2015 from 7:30 a.m. till 1:30 p.m. F, approval of a park facility right-of-way use permit for the use of Brewery Gulch for the 4th of July mucking and drilling contest on Saturday, July the 4th, 2015 from 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. G, approval of a liquor license application for Safeway located at 101 Knuckle Highway, Bisbee, Arizona. Andrea Lukowicz as the applicant. H, approval of a liquor license application for Contessa's Cantina located at 202 Tombstone Canyon, Bisbee, Arizona. Gustavo Alonso, applicant. Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve the consent agenda items A through H.
I second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda items A through H. Any questions, discussion? No? Ms. Williams, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Connors?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Dowdy?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Early?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item number three, presentation to Mayor and Council by Bisbee Vogue Incorporated regarding painting a mural along the wall of the steps to City Park. And Judy Perry would be the artist. So would somebody from Bisbee Vogue like to present, or maybe two, maybe three? Yeah.
Hi, I'm Char Poirier, 5013 West Rogers Trail in McNeil. I'm on the Bisbee Vogue Board of Directors. What you're looking at here are just a few examples of the millions that are out there of the new trend of painting old and gray concrete steps around the world. These are all different scenes. They can you'll see them with piano keys. There are so many different designs. And we kind of looked at that and thought, well, maybe there's some place we could do this in Bisbee. And in Bisbee, we have 351 sets of stairs. But the ones that are used probably most often are the ones up at City Park. So we were kind of thinking about moving, taking this design and going on up to something like this, which Judy Perry had done in honor of our 2012 centennial. And in fact, that year we received the Governor's Award from Governor Jan Brewer for the best special event rural in 2012. And this is a special kind of paint which Judy will explain, but it kind of gives you an idea. Judy has this whimsical nature about her, and it's very creative. And so what we would like to do is to move forward, and we're asking the council if you have some interest in this, of, oops, wrong side. Okay. Judy kind of has this whimsical sort of creative imagination, and what we've got here is sort of a monsoon kind of theme, where a little running brook is sort of coming down the stairs, and this would just be from the Brewery Avenue base level up to the level where you enter into City Park, so it's only that first half part of the stairway. And I will let Judy explain how this works and what kind of paint she uses and why we call it tattooing rather than painting.
My goal was to make it look like a stream bed coming down, kind of like how the stairway is when it's raining. And, at least my stairway's like that. It's like a river, and rocks come down and, land on the stairway and stuff. But this, it's also a little more like if you were in a forest or a stream or something, too. At the bottom is going to be a grate, and on the grate it'll say City of Bisbee. It'll also say Bisbee Vogue on it, like a manhole cover, where the water will look like it's going down into that at the bottom. Up at the top, where you're walking into City Park, there's three flat areas. And so this would be the flat area where you're walking into City Park, and we won't be painting up above that right now. So from City Park down, there'll be like a little pond, and then it'll come down to the next flat area. And I wanted to have one of the flat areas will have little stepping stones, and then the other flat area will have the log. Can you find the log? The log.
Okay, wait a minute.
Which I thought kids and people would enjoy walking along there and stepping on the stones. There's the log. So just the feel of, the log would actually, the front of the log will actually be down into one of the steps. And it'll be real earthy looking, browns and brownish green. And rocks. I mean, it's not going to be brightly colored or real. And the way that I paint, I pretty much paint real thin paint that soaks into the concrete, because people were worried about it coming off when they walk on it. But, it'll just soak in. I'm not going to prime the steps or anything like that. I'm just going to do it. I've done a lot of concrete walls now where it just, soaks in with the real thin exterior latex paint. Anybody have questions?
Any questions from the council? No, it looks... Councilmember Dowdy.
Isn't this in the historical district, the city park?
Yes, it is in the historical district.
Will we get in trouble for painting in the historical district?
No, we've already painted of our nine staircases. We've painted several we've marked them.
We've never painted on the steps. We've always painted the private walls along the sets of stairs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this is our first venture into city property.
No.
Cynthia, you want to come up?
Yeah.
Cynthia Conroy. Incidentally, Judy Perry and also Sharp.
City Park. City Park itself, with the help of Andy Heratic 5 years ago. Now, 5 years ago for the 20th annual is when Judy Perry was chosen by us to continue her wonderful work that is done on private walls all over in private homes and people's kitchens. And we extended it to 8 sets of stairs, because there were 8 private walls. Some of you may have seen them if you're driving on Tombstone Main Street. 81 Finders Keepers has a whole entranceway. It's very attractive and brings them lots of people, because it's stair number 3, and it has a little house and some beautiful, right? So all along the town already, there are numerous, visible from driving and walking, introductions to the 8 sets of stairs. The city park stairs were done because Andy Heratic and Public Works so admired Judy's work that if you go there, have you ever noticed the pots and the trees that are growing all over City Park up the other set of stairs? This is the set of stairs to the west. The center set of stairs to walk up into the center of the park, already has and has had for 5 years gigantic, beautiful potted plants. And that's what Judy does. She replicates nature in a way that enhances it to the imagination of children and creative people. And what did we hear last week? We heard that Bisbee's assets are its creative class. So the creative class, symbolized by this woman and supported by our nonprofit, has enhanced this town tremendously already. And any of you who haven't seen these, I recommend you take a walk to City Park, which we don't have a slide of, but all this is in addition to what we've already done 5 years ago. And now for our 25th annual, 5 years later, we'd like to do more because we do pay Judy.
Anybody
seen City Park, the beautiful planted?
It is beautiful, but that still doesn't answer the question as to whether or not the question I have is, do we have to get permission from the Historical Society?
No, no. No, you don't. You didn't before, and you don't now. The public works and the council actually, the council gives permission. There's no outside of the city of Bisbee group of people who say you can or can't do this thing.
If it's historical, I think you have to go through a few more hoops than that. And it may have been done in the past, but that doesn't mean that it was done correctly.
Well, all of us are really sensitive, and we can look into this question for you, but I've been attending these meetings for a really long time.
I feel better about it, just knowing that there is no problem with that.
Okay. We can show you that piece of information.
I think we have to be presented to them.
Right. And the city council can get informed, and we're not asking you to vote or approve this now.
No, I
think
Ron's that.
Right.
That would be something that I would like to see.
A couple of points I would like to make is, I certainly appreciate your energy and vitality of making the town more enjoyable. And to Judy Perry, some years ago, when I was in municipal government before, you did our Christmas cards, and I would tell you I traveled the circuit a lot, out of town, and various meetings and individuals, and quite frequently I would get comments on how they appreciated your Christmas cards that you designed for us. The third comment is Councilmember Dowdy and Councilmember Hansen is referring to. Maybe it wouldn't hurt to possibly run that past the design review board. Maybe it's not necessary. I don't know. Maybe refer that to the city manager or perhaps the city attorney just to make sure everything's all right. But I appreciate your energy and vitality. It's refreshing to me, actually. Councilmember Connors.
Thank you, Mayor. I love the idea, and actually the precedent has in City Park. Years ago, we painted the deck of City Park
right.
with shuffleboards and all kinds of
right.
of designs. So perhaps we could just, you know, as Mayor just suggested, you know, just float it past DRB. They'll have answers to this. I happen to be the liaison. City is on to DRB, and I know that they would love to have this come before. But there is a precedent already in City Park with painting murals on the floor, you know, the deck under our feet. So it's a great idea, I think. It's a great idea. Thank you, Mayor.
You're welcome. Any other questions or comments from the council? Any other further presentation?
No, that's it. We just want to thank you for your time and your thoughts, and we'll see what we can do about it and come back to you.
Councilmember Hansen.
I just want to say I like the idea. I'm not trying to poo-poo this at all. I love the idea, but I just want to make sure that once we get it done, someone's not going to swoop in and say, oh, well, you can't do that, and it's all been done for naught. That's my main concern.
Sure.
Councilmember Klein.
City Manager.
City Manager, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir. One thing I wanted to point out, and it was brought to my attention, I wasn't aware of this, and I apologize, but in the past, it also has gone before the BAC, and there's an application process where they'll kind of review and give some thought and input, so I wanted to, in fairness, throw that out as well. So we're not trying to create additional layers of government or anything like that, even though it may have been a practice, but is that really what we're wanting to do is just go by practice, not by... So I just wanted to just throw that out in fairness.
Let me just make a comment right to you. Bisbee Vogue, welcome to the bureaucracy, right?
Yeah, well, I just want to say this, having been here for 25 years around these questions. There's policies that are created to facilitate, and there are policies and commissions that are created to welcome to city government. We wouldn't want you to achieve anything or change your nature of operating. And so I will tell you, having sat on the Bisbee Arts Commission for 4 or 5 years myself, having sat on planning and zoning currently now, as well as previously with Ron Ertl 25 years ago, as well as having sat on not the designer review board, but the biggest problem, and I would ask somebody to speak to this, is that none of them meet. They meet every 2 months. This project, in honor of our 25th annual, and as a gift to all the tourists, which is why we got the 20th annual one done through the city council and public works in a speeded up process, because even back then, at least those committees met once a month. Some of them now meet twice a month. There is no requirement, as you all know, you take recommendations by those. And the 2 weeks we have right now, including the press's coverage, we give a chance for the public to come speak, including they can come speak 2 weeks from now. It's really a matter of, if you say, oh, BAC, well, they meet in 2 months. And, oh, Designer Review Board, I think they meet maybe once a month, maybe every 2 months. Our deadline is that Judy Perry will be gone for, what, 2 months, Judy? We wanted to actually start painting this, if you all approved it, in 2 weeks, and then have it finished for the 25th annual Bisbee 1000. And the congresswoman who's coming to town, Martha McSally, is singing the national anthem, running in the Bisbee 1000. We're going to have tremendous press that this town does not get and cannot get that's very positive, very, you know, in other words, we're not paying for it, but when you start bringing people this level of government to your event, it gets very exciting. Fort Huachuca's brass band will be here. You know, then we have an event followed with the firemen. We're celebrating our firemen at the fire and ice competition. So this is a little prelude to what you're going to soon hear about the Bisbee 1000 in its 25th annual year. So though I, having served on all these government committees, applaud you for remembering them, you're in a catch-22. Either have those places meet so people like us can bring an idea to them, or admit that those suggestions that you use those committees is just to block the idea from moving forward in a timely fashion. That's all I'd say.
And Mayor, certainly, you know, to that point,
City Manager, Mr. Johnson.
To that point, it's certainly, you know, and the chair of the BAC is here. There's nothing that says we can't have a special call meeting in the event that they want to meet and get together. So that certainly is within their purview to have that discussion relatively quickly with respect to the deadline and things of that nature. So just throwing it out.
Any other comments or questions from the council? Sorry, Councilmember Connors.
Sorry, I've been gone for 2 weeks. Thank you, Mayor. Couple things. And it is to what we have been, the citizenry has pleaded with this council to try to get ideas and things in front of them sooner than work, you know, having to act on them in 2 weeks, in a week and a half. So I think timing could have been better if this has been an idea that's been mulling around for a while. I'm not saying that this will go or not go. I'm expressing how some people in the community complain that we act too quickly without input. This would definitely be an issue, I know, because I'm sure there are people that don't want any concrete painted in Old Town. Second, we do get news. We do get exposure here in Bisbee, and sometimes it's great exposure. So to say that that just this event is huge and it is big, but to discount all of the things that the city has done since time in memoriam, that this is the only event that gets this kind of attention is falls out of hand. So I think that we do as well as we can with the information that we get in a timely fashion. I think the climb and the congressperson and all of that is great, but we have gotten press in the past, notary, good or bad, whether you're always going to be on one side or the other unless you have no opinion. So, you know, I'm happy, and I'd love to see this done. I don't know if it has to be done at such breakneck speed, because I also have to be on the Bisbee Arts Commission liaison. So I know that both of those people, and it's not to intentionally bog it down. I kind of take umbrage to people that just throw these things out, as it appears that we want to slow things down. But if I've learned anything in 2.5 years of being up here, It's I don't have to move as quickly as I have in the past in making decisions and making things happen. And I've heard that loud and clear from everybody who really has told me so. So, timing, you know, we're responsible to respond, but I think getting things here quicker than you have would have been simpler for us to have acted on it.
Well, we just got the drawings together, and actually the idea hasn't been on the table all that long. We got the drawings on Thursday last week. We came over here and showed them to Andy Horadic and Tom Klimek and Ashley Coronado saw them. It's not that if we could have done it quicker, if we had thought of it quicker,
sure,
you'd have had it quicker, believe me. I mean, we don't like wait until the last minute. There's so many things to be done. I don't want you to take it wrong by thinking that we want to bypass anything. We don't. We want things to be right, but we also want you to take a look at Old Bisbee and all the painting that does go on people's buildings. At our building, the Bisbee Vogue building, where we have the Bisbee 1000 and the stairs, tourists stop there daily to have their picture taken, and they'll put their foot up on one of those stairs that are painted on the wall to make it look like they're walking up the stairs. So what we're thinking is that this will also be another photographer's paradise for selfies that will get us out, get the Bisbee's name out. These stairs aren't for just us, you know. It's not just the Bisbee 1000. Yeah, we have a great day and we bring a lot of people, but what we also want to do is we want to promote the town, and we look for different ways to promote the town. This is one of them. I can see, a 50. When the people come to run the race, if this is done, you're going to see a lot of this out on the Internet. That reaches millions of people around the world. And whether they come here or not, it doesn't matter. But they're going to know Bisbee, and they're going to know this little set of stairs. And I think it will also entice people who may not even think of coming here during the monsoons to come here. I mean, why don't we have a monsoon madness season? Why don't we have a rate reduction season where the businesses and the hoteliers and everybody actually takes advantage of what the monsoon brings us, which are all the beautiful gardens and flowers and the water and just the scent of the rain when it first happens, the beautiful sunsets, the beautiful sunrises. These are all things that you could be marketing. Now this is just a small step in that direction, but it is a marketing tool nonetheless. And Judy put a lot of time into this. We've put a lot of time into this, even though it's only been like a week since we've been working on this. We're not trying to push anybody's buttons. We're not trying to push anything through. All we want to do is get it done and help keep getting the word about Bisbee out there. Thank you.
Yeah, I was just, I'm just anticipating and I don't know who they are. Somebody saying that it's been that way for 100 years. Why paint it? And I just would like to allow them time to voice their opinion on
sure.
why it doesn't need to be painted.
Sure.
I'm not.
Yeah. It's understandable, and everybody in Bisbee has their opinion. And just so that you know where we're coming from. Just so that you know where we're coming from, this isn't just for us. This is for our residents. It's for our visitors. We're paying for it. We're not looking for anything from the city in that regard. We think we have a wonderful talent in Judy, and I think she's created a really cute little thing that kids and anybody that has fun in their head still, even at an old age, I think they would get a kick out of this. So thank you very much for your time again.
Thank you, Shaw Poirier.
Item number 4, public hearing on truth and taxation and public hearing and discussion on fiscal year 2015-16 proposed budget for the city of Bisbee. Let me quickly refer to the city manager, Mr. Justin Johnson.
Thank you, members of the council. What you have before you is a council action form that, as required by Arizona Revised Statute 42-17-107, a requirement for a public hearing as it relates to the truth and taxation. And so that's it.
Thank you very much. I'm going to open this public hearing. Is there any discussion by members of the public in support of the items? No. Is there any discussion by members of the public in opposition to the items? No. Let me address the city clerk. Is there any written communication filed with the city clerk's office?
No, there was not.
I'm going to close this public hearing. Do we have a motion?
I move that we close the public hearing.
Okay. Public hearing. We can take a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion passes unanimously. The public hearing is closed. Next, we are going to possibly. Mr. Johnson.
That particular item, as we discussed earlier, requires a roll call vote.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
This is just closing the public hearing part.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Normally we don't have to do that, but. Yeah. Do we have a motion? We're at item number
five.
Five. I'll make a motion. I move.
Item number four.
Four.
Four. Right. I move to consider increasing the levy in the primary property tax rate from 2.4068 to 2.4845 per $100 of assessed value for fiscal year 2015-16.
I second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion from the council? No? Ms. Williams, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Connors?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Dowdy?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Early?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item number five, discussion of possible approval of resolution R-15-08, adopting the final budget for fiscal year 15-16 for the City of Bisbee, adopting the alternative expenditure limitation for fiscal year 15-16. Any questions or comments from the council? Do we have a motion?
I move to approve resolution R-15-08, adopting the final budget and the alternative expenditure limit for fiscal year 2015-2016.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any thoughts, discussion, remarks? No. We have a motion and a second to approve resolution R-15-08, adopting the final budget and the alternative expenditure limit for fiscal year 2015-2016. Ms. Williams, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Connors?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Dowdy?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Early?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item number six, discussion of possible approval of an intergovernmental agreement between the Palominas Fire District and the City of Bisbee regarding EMS equipment and EMS personnel. Let me refer to the City Manager of Bisbee, Mr. Justin Johnson.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the Council. As you all recall, at our most recent workshop, we discussed an intergovernmental agreement with the Palominas Fire District associated with EMS personnel and equipment. As you had a very lengthy discussion about what this opportunity means and opening up the doors not just for the personnel apparatus but also for training purposes as it relates to what it is we're trying to do. You know, we just adopted a resolution where we had to make some very tough budget decisions, and in my mind this intergovernmental agreement really moves the needle as it relates to progress and us moving forward. If you have any questions about what you have before you, we're here, and I'm also, you know, both chiefs are here for the purpose of answering any questions.
Once again, I thought we had a very productive work session on the subject matter. There are, and I support this, but there are a couple questions that I have, and part of it was the termination agreement, and it seemed a little bit vague to me. In other words, two parties can agree to it, or if the certificate of necessity is pulled, then that would probably negate it. And so let's say one party wanted out of it and the other party didn't want out of it. Maybe I could refer that to the City Attorney, Mr. Hansen.
Sure.
I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I'm looking at paragraph 3. Is that what you're looking at in the draft IGA? Basically, it starts out saying this is a one-year agreement that can be automatically renewed. But it also goes on to say that either party may terminate the agreement without cause upon 60 days notice to the other party, which gives you an out at any time during the lifetime of the agreement upon 60 days notice. So that's without cause. That's if just the city didn't like, you know, Palominas didn't do anything wrong, or if Palominas is looking at it the other way, the city didn't do anything wrong. We just don't think this is working out for us. We would like out. So
That's it. So it's structured as basically the thinking is it's going to be a one-year agreement, but if you don't like it at any time before that or any time after that, you can get out in 60 days.
Thank you. I appreciate you clarifying that. Just a couple other comments. It seems to me that somewhere down the line here in the city of Bisbee for the fire department, we probably might need at least one more ambulance. And I know that I believe we have two paramedics that might come on, Chief, might come on board in September, perhaps, that are in training right now. So we have three, which is dangerously low in my opinion, two part-timers, and two that might come aboard in September. Is that sufficient with this agreement with Palominas?
Thank you, Mayor. We have two of our personnel that's in the medic program right now. They graduate in September, and before they're released to work out in the field, they'll be precepted by our medics that we have now that are experienced medics, which is necessary for them to make sure that everything works well for them once we release them on the street. It's going to help us. Certainly, it's not enough. You know, when we have two more personnel that are in medic training now, just started this past month, so that's 16 months of school before you're released as a paramedic. So it's going to take quite some time. And you know, with our medics and the help from Palominas, we're hoping to kind of bridge that gap until we can get more people trained to do that. And that's what we're hoping that we can do.
Thank you. Councilmember Klein, do you have a comment?
Well, are you through with your questions?
I probably have a couple more. But go ahead.
Okay. Since we already have the auto aid, why are we redoing this? Why are we doing this? We already have an auto aid agreement with Palominas Fire.
Quite frankly, I think it. What we're doing is the automatic aid agreement has more to do with responding to an incident. This is very specific as it relates to the EMS personnel and the ambulance part of what we do, the service that we provide. We don't have an automatic aid agreement as for a backup in the event that our guys, as we know, we're down to paramedics. That automatic aid agreement does not allow us the opportunity to, quite frankly, enter into an IGA or call on the Palominas Fire District to serve as a backup support as it relates to inter-facility transfers. So that's why we're doing this. And, you know, I think we, when we had the joint conversation, the joint workshop, I think we kind of laid out a relatively good case as to why we're doing this and why we're moving in this direction. We're at a place, realistically, and getting back to your question of why, we're at a place where it's about survivability, for our department. We're at a place where we have to start thinking out of the box as it relates to our business and the nature of what we do. When we look at the number of calls that we're responding to, the vast majority of our calls are medically related calls. And so the backbone of our department is such as it relates to the medical field, so to speak. And so when we reached out and had the conversations, and the chiefs and Captain Burnlight had the conversations with Palominas Fire District as it relates to coming together, it not only opens the door for the EMS personnel, for the EMS equipment, it also opens the door for additional training opportunities for both departments. And so I won't bring anything before you that isn't mutually beneficial. I think in my mind, that's the reason why we're doing this.
And I understand that. I just didn't know why we were doing this yet again, because we do have the auto aid in place. But now with the, in number three on the duration, it says that, again, like the auto aid, that it renews automatically. However, with this, we've got a 60-day notice, where with the auto aid, it's 30. Mm-hmm. So why the variation? 30 days on one and 60 on the other, why aren't we?
Depends on who.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't think that you'll find a lot of logic in the distinction between the two. I looked at the auto aid agreement, thought that this made a little more sense for this agreement, because it's an ongoing agreement. But 30 days, 60 days, you have to pick some period of time. 60 days seemed reasonable, particularly since people were investing in additional equipment and possibly personnel in order to make this work. The 60 days was a better length of time than 30 days, but that could all change.
Okay. And realistically, you know, the 60-day time frame, as I can't reiterate enough, I think there's also an equity issue in the event that either party chooses not to renew this agreement. And so to give the City of Bisbee Fire Department 30-day notice that we're not going to move forward with a certain agreement, I think there's an equity issue that we have to be realistic about. And many agreements that you see in that may come before you, and thank you for pointing out that the automatic 8 was 30 days, but the reality is there's a certain equity issue in giving either party the opportunity enough time to plan for a contingency. What are we going to do next if we've agreed and we've been operating under these pretenses for 10 months? So now 60 days, you know, 30 days out, we're going to stop all of a sudden. And so I really do believe there's an equity issue that we have to be really fair about to both departments.
Okay. And on that same number three item, it does say that, the negotiation and discussion will be between the Palominas Fire Chief and the Bisbee City Manager. It does not mention our chief. Mm-hmm. And I think he should also be involved discussions.
Okay, and as we talked about with the Palominas Fire District, the reason why that's there is because the Palominas Fire Chief is the chief administrative officer, chief executive officer for that particular department. And here, we're duplicating what we've done here. And quite frankly, if I know it says Bisbee City Manager, and we pointed out before, City Manager or designee or whatever the case may be, that's the rationale behind it. And so by nature of both departments and the positions associated, that's the reason why that's there.
Well, I know, and you usually do put designee, but you didn't in this. And I'm just questioning.
Yes, ma'am.
Certainly. And then if we move to Bisbee's obligation under number 5, it says here that Bisbee shall, we have to be responsible for registering and insuring and billing, and that we have to do all of that. Is Palominas going to be kicking in for any of the costs of this?
To be honest, I think Palominas has kicked in a pretty significant portion as it relates to the acquisition of the pieces of equipment, ensuring that equipment is properly labeled, the maintenance on that equipment in and of itself. They've really taken a step as it relates to ensuring that the investment is there. So I think the level of commitment has been demonstrated, and quite frankly, you have both chiefs that have talked about it, have seen it, that have looked at it. Captain Burnlight is the one that's responsible, and he's looking at the certification process. And so I really do believe that the investment, the financial commitment, exceeding well over $40,000 as relates to the acquisition alone for these pieces of equipment demonstrates a level of financial commitment to seeing that this program actually works and is mutually beneficial for both agencies. In addition, you have the commitment of committing 50% of the funds that are collected. And so, again, this is something that is mutually beneficial to both agencies.
Well, and I agree. I'm just asking. And it is a financial commitment, but there will also be a financial reward for them as well.
And for us as well.
True. Yes, ma'am. I'm not saying that there isn't. I've got my questions, so. And on page 3, when we're talking about staffing, with joint staffing, now, is this only for transfers out of town, or it doesn't really specify?
I think what, as it states in here, Bisbee and Palominas jointly shall use their best efforts to staff the rescue unit
with one Bisbee employee and one Palominas employee. And the idea behind that was to utilize one of our personnel and their personnel, and that's how you kind of get the 50% on the transport. So it can be for an interfacility transfer, or it can be utilized if we have no vehicles left or people left or however it may be, to be able to transport with one of their personnel, one of our personnel.
Okay, but this is mainly just for interfacility transfers, correct?
It's going to be utilized for that a lot, yes.
Okay. And then on number 8, as far as reporting, there's actually a typo in there. It should read not later than, and it says late. So somebody may want to correct a typo. And let's see, on reimbursement, it says here that payment will not be later than the 10th of the month. For transports or whatnot. What happens in the event that we have delayed payments, like from Medicare or whatever? Are we still going to have to put that out front, even if we haven't been reimbursed for it?
I think you see. I mean, you don't have a penalty in there. That's just giving us a guideline as to when payments are to be dispersed. And so, I can't speak to a what-if scenario if Medicare is late. I don't know how often Medicare is late.
And I think also that this is based on actual receipts of revenues, isn't it?
It is.
Rather than amounts billed, it's based on actual amounts received.
Right.
So in case that Medicare or Medicaid paid late, my understanding that the agreement is since the city hadn't received that amount or Palominas hadn't received that amount, it wouldn't be used in the calculation for disbursement to one or the other.
Okay, so it's as the funds are received.
Are received.
Okay. It doesn't say that in there, so I'm just clarifying.
I think it does, actually. Okay, 9A. In the net amount received by Bisbee for any transports. The net amount received being the actual receipts.
Okay, but then, and B, it says not later than the 10th of each calendar month.
That's for anything that's based on amounts received pursuant to 9A.
Okay. And then on number 11, as far as the scope of relationship, I know we have it here. I know we have it in our auto aid. But after a newspaper article that came out, there's been quite a few people that have been calling and questioning and wondering and asking about partnership and merging and things like that. And it does say in here, it does say that, that is not it. But I do want to bring that out in a public meeting, that this is aid, mutual aid or backup for Bisbee, that in no way is this a partnership of any sort as far as departments merging and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay. And I just, because there's a lot of people in the public that are very confused about that.
Okay.
Because of an article that came out in the review. And it focused on Palominas Fire, and it was mentioned that they, what they were going to be doing with Bisbee. So I just want that clear, that it is not a merger of any sort.
Okay.
And then as far as workers' comp on 17, and this goes for both departments. If one of their employees is hurt, because they're not used to stairs. I mean, let's be honest, they're not used to the type of terrain we have here. If one of their employees gets hurt here, then who's responsible for that workman's comp claim? Is it the city of Bisbee because he was injured here? And the same token, if one of our guys is hurt out there, will Palominas be responsible for their claim?
Yeah. I think here where in that same section where it states the primary employer shall be solely liable for any workers' compensation benefits that may accrue. So I think that's answering the question as I.
But it also says that an employee of either party shall be deemed to be an employee of both agencies.
That's required by state law. But the operative sentence for your question, Councilperson Klein, is that if it's a City of Bisbee employee, then the city is the primary employer, and if it's a Palominos Fire District employee, they're the primary employer, and they have to pay the workers' comp benefits. So that's okay. How that will work.
Okay, and then on 25, as far as attorney's fees and costs, and I know that this relates to this agreement, but my question is, and again, it goes for both departments, but, you know, since we do have more medical calls here than Palominos does, and we know how people are, and, you know, if it's one of our employees and they, you know, a party threatens a lawsuit because they felt they weren't treated right, or, you know, the ride was bumpy or whatever. I mean, people out there have all kinds of, you know, claims of whatever. Mm-hmm. Of course, if it's one of our employees, you know, and we're sued, we cover that. If it's not one of our employees and it's one of their employees and there's a suit brought about because of a call, then who covers that?
That would be this provision that number 25 doesn't deal with the situation where somebody who is picked up and provided an ambulance service doesn't like the service and wants to sue. This paragraph doesn't cover this at all. In fact, nothing in this agreement really addresses that issue. This paragraph 25 just is if the city and Palominos have a dispute over this contract that can't be resolved. This deals with attorney's fees in that case, but it doesn't deal with a negligence against the city or negligence against Palominos case. That would be handled
correct.
By the insurers.
And I just said that.
Okay.
But what I wanted to ask was, because it is not addressed in this, that very issue.
Okay. You're asking who...
Okay, yes, that's what I said. It has nothing to do with this clause here. However, it does bring up the question of attorney's fees or who is responsible if it's not one of our employees that, you know, maybe was negligent.
Okay. Yes, if you look at...
And it goes on both departments.
Paragraph 15 addresses that issue. That's the indemnification clause. I think I can net it out in... a couple sentences. If Bisbee is at fault, Bisbee or its insurer will pay. If Palominos is at fault, Palominos or its insurer will pay. That's the purpose of the indemnification clause in number 15. So.
Okay, but, well, okay. It still didn't completely answer, but that's okay. Mayor, I just wanted, you know, some of these questions answered. I'm not opposed to this, but I just thought that some things, you know, needed to be brought up. And I don't know if this is the time or later to maybe talk about a work session regarding our fire department.
We can address that as soon as you want to.
Okay, after we vote, can we
sure.
talk about that?
Sure,
tomorrow, that time?
Whenever you like.
Just request a work session.
Okay. I know that this is what is not agendized.
Okay.
So I'm well aware of that.
Okay. Councilmember Sullivan.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess I have a question about couple things. As far as there being one of each of the EMTs, one from Bisbee and one from Palominos, how does that work? Like, do they meet up somewhere and hop in together? Or, I mean, are they coming all the way from Palominas to come if we don't have enough vehicles? We're going to bring in, then they pick up a Bisbee guy and then come.
If it's a transfer, that's what would happen, yeah.
Okay. Right.
But it depends on the scene of the incident or whatever. It could be one of each personnel that are at the scene that might transport that patient.
And transfers are usually, they occur when they can't receive the services they need in Bisbee. It's
That's
usually
correct.
Pretty serious.
That's correct.
Something that should happen quickly.
Well, we do have some SOPs with the Copper Queen Hospital that identifies that. And we have that for that purpose, to identify how soon the patient should be taken out of the hospital. And we just to give you an example, I don't know, about 3 days ago, we got dispatched for 10 transports out of the Copper Queen Hospital in one shift. Certainly, Bisbee did their best and took three of them. Arizona Ambulance took some and they flew two of them out. And that was in a 24-hour period. And it's not unusual to get dispatched for 6-8 transports out of the Copper Queen in one period. So
this would effectively eliminate some of the need for Arizona Ambulance's services?
That's correct.
And why would we prefer to have Palominas come to the rescue rather than using Arizona Ambulance, who is right here, which would be a quicker response time for the people who are, in fact, in need of immediate care?
Well, that can be, it's not always quicker with Arizona Ambulance. A lot of times they're not available here. The ambulance that stationed that over here by the old Public Works, that is not specifically for Bisbee. That ambulance is utilized in Bisbee, Douglas, Sierra Vista, wherever they're needed, because they work on volume. They do transport, so they're not always quicker. This allows us to partner with Palominas and for us to capture those transfers so we can make more revenue for the city, and that's what that does as well.
Okay. So has any kind of partnership been explored with the Arizona Ambulance?
We do have they do have a backup CON with the city of Bisbee already. So there is procedures already in place.
Thank you.
Mayor? Councilmember Connors.
Thank you very much. Chief, Arizona Ambulance was invited in the last year or so to have conversations with the hospital and the fire department. I mean, historically, you know, they represent, you know, a private industry. However, I'm trying to remember where there has been, they have been invited to a table, you know, at the Copper Queen Community Hospital.
That's
and
correct.
Discussions have transpired with them. And I think, believe me, and I've said this publicly before, public safety and policy and thing is not anything that I want to become part of, making policy for you. But they had an opportunity a year or plus ago to be more involved with parsing things up or just being, you know, trying to figure out how things are done. And recently they haven't really kind of wanted to respond to any kind of overture to let's get together and talk. So this isn't just being shut out, but this is the way, along with the equipment and the training and the things that are real tangible to our department, this has been, you know, been coming along for a while. So I don't know if there's a question in there or not, but I do have a question. A doctor makes the decision when somebody needs to get in the back of an ambulance and go, or a helicopter. It's not the fire department.
That's correct. Yeah. Well, from the emergency room.
From the ER room.
That's right.
Right.
I mean, our medics make the decision on scene to determine if they're going to be flown out from the scene or transported to the hospital. But in the hospital, it's the doctor. That's correct.
Yeah. I mean,
and once they have conversations with the receiving facility. That's correct.
I mean, we could certainly anticipate it, but, I mean, they're the ones that are making those calls.
That's right.
Fly them or drive them.
That's correct.
And then, okay. Thank you. Thanks.
Any other questions or comments from the council? Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the intergovernmental agreement between Palominas Fire District and the City of Bisbee regarding EMS equipment and EMS personnel.
Second that.
We have a motion and a second to approve the intergovernmental agreement between Palominas Fire District and the City of Bisbee regarding EMS equipment and EMS personnel. On this item, Ms. Williams, I'd like to have a roll call vote.
Councilmember Connors?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Dowdy?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Ertling?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Chief. Item number 7, discussion and possible approval of notice to intent to adopt ordinance O-15-04, amending the city code articles 2.6.3 and 2.6.9 to streamline transfers of city real property and eliminating the public auction requirement for certain parcels. Let me refer to...
Can I just make a motion that we approve this right now?
No, I have some questions on
no,
that.
No, no, Mayor, I was just
okay.
I was making lights. Okay. That's all.
Let me refer to the city attorney, Mr. Hansen.
Thank you. I think it was my first council meeting and second council meeting, a real estate transfer came before the council. A couple things that I observed with that is there were a lot of different bodies vetting transfers of city property, starting with city staff, then to the Planning and Zoning Commission, then a bidding process and an auction required a meeting of the council, then a notice of intent to adopt an ordinance, and then actual adoption of the ordinance. And that seemed like an awful lot of staff time and paperwork and council time to do a transfer of property. And all that, though that there were some difficulties or at least some interesting questions regarding that one. Building Inspector Ward has a couple others in place that he's vetted by the Planning and Zoning Commission that are really pretty simple transfers that shouldn't require that much paperwork and that much council time. So I thought there might be a way to streamline that process. And that's one of two reasons I've brought this forward before the council today. Because the city charter says that transfers of city property have to be by ordinance, and we don't have any ability to change the charter as we sit here today. We have to work with the fact that we have to do a transfer of ordinance, but we don't have to do the notice of intent as well as an ordinance in order to do that. We can also speed up the bidding process, which is or speed up the number of meetings the council has to have in order to conduct an auction, maybe no auction at all if the council determines that it's not the kind of property that really doesn't need to be auctioned. And there's a few parcels like that, one that'll be brought forward by staff here shortly, where there's a little piece of property that's adjacent to an existing property. The only way you get to it is through somebody's property or the person who wants that piece. Just no reason to really hold an auction for that at all. It's a waste of time by the council, waste of time by staff, and from the point of the view of the person who wants to purchase the property to show up at an auction wouldn't make any sense. So we can cut out some of those steps. The second part of the draft ordinance I've brought before you today has to do with that very issue, whether you really need an auction at all. I've given you a very easy case where there's a little piece of real estate adjacent to an existing parcel. The only person that could possibly want it would be the person that owns that adjacent parcel. But there might be some other circumstances too, where you feel it wouldn't be appropriate to auction off the property and open it up to bid, where somebody, a third party, can come in and buy the property. That determination would have to be made by the council, whether or not it should go to auction or not go to auction. I've tried to write this as pragmatically as I can to give the council discretion, but try to provide some guidelines so it doesn't become open-ended, so that everybody that wants to buy a parcel can't bring it before the council and say, hey, I want to be the only, or I don't want it to go to auction, I want to be the person to buy the parcel without having to go through bid. Sometimes bidding is very appropriate. Don't want to try and cut that out. Just want to try and cut it out when it's really not appropriate and really not necessary. What we've left in this ordinance is any proposed sale of property would have to be vetted by the Planning and Zoning Commission first before it came to the council. I think it's a pretty good safeguard on determining whether the city has a use for the parcel and determine whether it's appropriate, whether to take it out to bid or not. Planning and Zoning Commission would make a recommendation to the council, but it's always, in the end, the council's decision whether to go that route or not. So anyway, trying to streamline it, trying reduce the amount of staff time, council time, and paperwork involved in transfer to city property.
A couple of points.
Sure.
During the course of a year, this really doesn't come up that often, maybe two or three times a year maximum. Not often, usually just little tiny strips. I have a problem of the council making a decision whether that would go out to bid or auction. It could possibly give the appearance of favoritism. And I know the process is a little cumbersome, it is a little long, but city property belongs to the people of the community. So my thought is, it seems to work the way it is. I'm not sure why it would need to be streamlined. The second thing I would like to bring up is we're talking about small pieces, but how small? There's no description of what small piece actually means. So could it be 80 acres that's surrounded by private owners or one owner? And the council would decide to, this doesn't have to go to auction. It's landlocked in there and nobody could get in. They don't have access, right-of-way access to that. So could a council decide to, in that particular case, we'll just sell it to the people that own the land around it? And so I think it opens up a door, a possibility of an appearance, and there may not be favoritism, but it could give the appearance of favoritism. And in government, you don't even want to go down that road, in my opinion. And so these are some thoughts that I have. So is there a limitation? We're talking about small parcels, and I know you're referring to that little problem that we had, not problem, dilemma or confusion of a few months ago. So, but that land was not landlocked. That land was off to the edge. So I think that you just said that perhaps it would only benefit the owner of that adjacent property, but it seems to me that everybody has a right to bid on city-owned property. That's what it seems like to me. And I would just like to keep it where it's at. That's just my opinion. A little cumbersome, takes a little while for a second reading of ordinances, but I think it's necessary. That's my thoughts. Any other thoughts from the council member Klein?
I tend to agree with you on this. We're constantly talking about we need to be as transparent as possible. And I think the extra steps that we take or whatever does do that. And while we know up here, we know that there's not favoritism to one homeowner or another. And we've had some in years past where it dealt with steps getting up to people's homes. I don't know. I still think that needs to be a council decision, and I think we still need to go through all the steps so that we are transparent as possible. That's just my thoughts.
Any other questions or thoughts on this, Council Member Hansen?
Well, remembering the dilemma that we had, I kept hearing about the spirit of the law, and I kept hearing about, fairness. And there are situations where it really is not fair, and we're kind of locked into this. And I think having it streamlined addresses that, because I personally think it was a travesty what happened in the last one, and it shouldn't have happened that way. And I think that this gives us a little bit more latitude for the spirit of the law and what would be appropriate.
I understand. Just to follow up on that. So in a case like that where a piece of property is adjacent to another piece of property and the adjacent property owner wants to buy that, so the council, the streamlining would allow that person to get that piece of property, the streamlining would do that, and the council makes that decision. I think that opens up a serious can of worms where the public appearance would be, we're going to give it to this person or we're going to give it to that person. We're going to streamline this and not let it go out to bid or auction. I believe that every piece of property the city owns, whatever it is, needs to go out to auction. It belongs to all the people of the community. And I think that we would run into a dangerous situation, maybe not this year, next year, but sometime where it might give the appearance, I'm being a little bit redundant, that it would show favoritism to one possible buyer over another. And sometimes we don't like what happens, but this is the way we do it.
But don't you think that historically, I mean, these people had been using this. They thought it was their property. I think that should really count for something rather than just having it pulled right out from under them.
Councilmember Connors.
Are you done?
I am done.
Okay. I don't want to interrupt you. Thank you, Mayor. I have, actually, it's not eliminating public auction requirements for certain parcels. I purchased a piece of property from the Arizona Highway Department. It took me 4.5 years to do it. A number of engineers came and made sure it was just such that they really didn't need it. And then the person I was dealing with in Safford, Armando Membrilla, told me, he suggested that I go to everybody else whose property adjoins that piece of property and ask them if they intend on bidding against or wanting that piece of property. Everybody said they didn't. I asked everyone, and this is, I guess it happened in a perfect world. Everybody, I gave him his address. They all wrote letters to him and saying, I have no interest in that piece of property. So again, it was not an instant gratification thing, and you can ask my wife. It took 4.5 years, and she was real tired by the end of it before we moved our room addition. But there are ways that we could eliminate a public auction from happening, and that we're not doing it out of hand every time, but to have the opportunity to eliminate a public auction for certain parcels, I think, is what the legal and city manager are asking for. And I guess that's a question. It's just an opportunity from time to time to eliminate public auction.
That's correct. This does not apply to every potential transfer of property. It would ultimately be determined by the council, again, upon the recommendation of the Planning and Zoning Commission, who would first hear it, who notifies property owners, I think, up to 300 feet away. So that's a good process for finding out if there are other property owners nearby who have an interest in that parcel. And if they do, presumably, that might lead to an auction process. But anyway, that would be the vetting process. And I should, one of the things I should make clear here is there's really two parts to this. One is streamlining it by, in some cases, not having an auction. The other part is just streamlining it by eliminating the having both a notice of intent to adopt an ordinance and to adopt an ordinance. So it's not an either-or proposition. You don't have to take it all or nothing. You can choose to do it both ways. So, and I should mention on the point raised by Councilmember Klein and by the mayor, one of the things that's typically in statutes regarding the disposition of government property from state land to the county and sometimes the cities as well, is the auction process, for the very reason that you all mentioned, is even though it's a very, very cumbersome process, the bidding process does in some sense ensure that it's not like in the old days where elected officials were able to steer property to their friends and family by cutting out the auction process. That's really why the auction process was instituted, even though it is cumbersome. And I respect cumbersome in some circumstances. But I think that the procedure, even with the possibility in some cases you don't have an auction, you'd still have enough vetting process, enough transparency going before the commission and to the council for any decision, that if anybody smells a rat, there's an opportunity to raise that. And ultimately, it's upon the full council to make that decision, not the mayor, not a particular council member who happens to be in a particular ward and whose friends want that particular property. It's open in front of this full public. And I think that's a pretty good safeguard. But yeah. If you disagree, I respect that.
Yeah. My take is that the council would be making those decisions, and if aspersions would be directed at a certain council member, mayor, or whoever, the system we have now pretty much eliminates that. With the bidding process, the notification process, the first and second reading of the ordinance, I don't like the possibility of
appearance only, and probably nothing there, but an appearance that it was guided to some particular person. I'm also a little bit confused. Is there a limit on the size of the property? Let's say that property was 80 acres and it's surrounded by private land, landlocked city property. Would that be one the council could make the decision and guide it to one individual at a certain price?
There's not a size limit on this. If
there's no size limit.
No, there's no size limit. You could put a size limit on it or not.
Okay.
But there is no size limit on it as written.
So a major piece of property that the city owns, and we own a few of those, could possibly, council could decide that, that it wouldn't go out to bid. It would just be sold to somebody. Is that what this is indicating that you have here?
If the Planning and Zoning Commission made that recommendation to the council in the first place, and then the council determined that it was not appropriate to go out to bid, that's correct.
Or not to go out to bid.
Or not to go out to bid.
Yeah. That's why I think we ought to leave the old system that we have in place, because we have areas of significant amount of properties. They might be 10 years from now. It makes me nervous. And I think when we have huge areas of property, everybody who wants that property should have the opportunity. Maybe the council would give that to them, but then again, maybe they wouldn't. And so it could be directed to one individual with perhaps a certain type of an interest in that particular property. And the bidding process on a large parcel, in my opinion, is absolutely imperative. I wouldn't, and I'm not saying this council would do it, but, you know, obviously we're not going to be up here forever. And I don't even want to run the risk of an appearance of something like that, that a significant piece of property council has the appearance that it was guided to one individual without the bidding auction process. That's my position. Any other comments from the council? Councilmember Sullivan.
We could always amend it to include a size, because I think it does sort of eliminate the problem that we had over the last couple of months that turned into quite an ordeal. And again, it is at our discretion and the discretion of the planning and zoning. But just a suggestion that we could amend it to include a size.
Let me say this. For every year I was up here for a couple of terms some time ago, and as I said, we sell off two or three times a year little tiny pieces, 500 square feet, 1,000 square feet. We never had the dilemma or the, let's say, confusion that we had with that property that was auctioned off a few months back. That is, in my opinion, a kind of a rare occurrence. So I don't foresee that coming up. It surprised me that it actually came up. So anyway, my point is, I don't, and perhaps we can amend it, but that's another question, what size. I'd just rather just leave it right where it is. Let's go through the process, and somebody wants a 300 square foot piece that's under their driveway or under their garage. They come down and just go through the process. I think it works fine just the way it is. It's open to more public scrutiny. It is cumbersome, but that's government. But this stuff belongs to the people of the community, and I think it needs to go through a rather diligent interest, watching of our properties when they're going to be sold off. And so streamlining it, I don't like that. I think the process works fine just the way it is, even though it might take a little while to pull that off. It is the people's property, and I hold that in the highest regard.
Mayor.
Councilmember Klein.
Again, realizing that the property that we've been talking about is not agendized here, but it was brought up, and it is a very rare thing that happens. And we followed, yes, we followed what we had in place. But we did not have to vote to do what was done. You know, there were a couple of us that felt that it was not right. And even though we were on the losing end of the vote, we still had that and we still followed our process. Mm-hmm. So if something like that should come up again, we still have that right to say, no, this is not right. You know, these homeowners, you know, had no fault in anything, and so we're just not going to, you know, go to the highest bidder or whatever. We're just not going to sell it and just leave it, you know, and then work out what we need to legally, because it is a very rare thing. But we always have that option of, you know, saying no, and Thank you.
Councilmember Connors.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Council. Okay. Thank you, Mayor. I know from time to time, and I'm going to speak specifically to Design Review Board, there is a process where the board is able to make an administrative decision, and it doesn't have to go an administrative decision at the inspector's level, and something doesn't have to go to the board. They're saying, you know, this is where we draw the line, but anything less than that, take care of it. You know, you don't need us, you don't need our benediction, or you don't need our blessing of that decision. And it helps the city staff time, and it helps the person that wants the job done. I mean, it helps. It's a win-win situation, and we as a city council, before that came to fruition, had to sign off on that. So we have given them a certain amount of autonomy to make decisions up to a certain point. And I think that, again, I'm going back to just auction requirements for certain parcels, and if we could get a number, an acceptable square footage, or we could get the language just right on this, I think that anything that streamlines something that we're doing isn't evil out of hand. It isn't deception out of hand. And the perception is, I mean, we, you know, all of us, we could look at and see an event happen, and, you know, right here in this room, and there's going to be 40 different perceptions of what happened. So for us to, for me as a city councilman, to really to worry about what people think of me as part of this board, it's part of what I need to take into account here. But I'm also I'm reading just the notice of intent of the adoption of this item number 7, and it doesn't reek of conspiracy. It doesn't reek of collusion. It doesn't reek of anything other than just what he's asking for: the possibility, from time to time, to streamline this process. So, and again, staff, I mean, it impacts, it has a lot more to do, it impacts absolutely everybody, not just the stakeholders that own that public property by being a citizen of this town and paying taxes in this town. We also have employees that have to process all of this. So I think that's my perception of reading item number 7 as he's just asking for occasionally, if we could, you know, not have to have everything go to auction. And I gave you an example, a personal example of how that didn't go to auction. You know, things can be, and it's all new. Everything's moving. The only thing that has to change is everything, because it just changes. Everything does change. So I think flexibility, autonomy, simplicity, when it can be applied in this very thick bureaucratic thing that we do, and it makes sense, and the motivation for doing it, your motive is everything in this world. Motive is everything. If your motive is to be fair and to help something happen, and no one's going to be hurt, I think it would be nice that they had the opportunity to be able to act like a little more nimbly. Thanks.
Let me go to the city manager first, and we'll go over to Councilmember Sullivan. Mr. Johnson.
Very quickly, I don't know if it's helpful or not, but would a provision such as, you know, anything above 2 acres or above 1 acre would come before council for, or anything less than, is that something that you all would be amenable to? You can go back and kind of tweak it a little bit. Just an idea. I mean, I don't know if that's helpful or not. And I know you spoke to, as an example, 80 acres. But certainly hearing, you know, hearing what you're putting down, I don't know if that's helpful or not, but I mean, maybe that's a consideration. Because when you consider the since I've been here, the public auctions that we've gone through have been relatively small pieces. And so, and even though many of the folks that have been successful bidders have questioned the time associated with the public auction process for, you know, such small pieces, so I don't know if that's helpful or not.
Well, I'll get to you just a second to respond. I believe that anything that it belongs to the public needs to be handled very openly, and if it's cumbersome, it's cumbersome.
Okay.
Councilmember Sullivan.
I had a question for the city attorney. In what Councilmember Klein said was that perhaps in the future, when and if a similar situation comes up, where it seems like it's not the right thing to go with the highest bidder, and then at that point we work it out legally. Is there a way to work it out legally under the guise of having the public auction? So say we had decided not to sell to Mrs. Borgensen, and instead we said we want to go with the next highest bidder, which was Mr. and Mrs. Hagstrom. Is there a way to do that?
I didn't understand that there was an app. Let me put it this way. I understood that there was an option for the council to reject all bids. I didn't understand that there was a process for the council to accept the second highest bid. And I would have to look back to make sure that that understanding is correct, but I think that's correct. So no, to answer your question, at least since this had already gone to the bid, I don't, if the council had voted to reject all bids, I'm not sure what the council could have done other than go through the auction process again and hope for a different result.
So right now there isn't really a process for acquiring a piece of land other than going through the auction process if it's owned by the city of Bisbee.
The only exception to that that I can think of is if the ownership of a city parcel was disputed and that went to litigation was in threat litigation, I could think of a way to settle that without going through an auction process, but short of that, I can't think of anything.
Hmm. I wonder if it wouldn't be a good idea for us as a city to create some sort of way for people that maybe there's just a tiny little itty-bitty, whatever it is, piece of property that's owned by the city that's kind of within their land and they just want to own all of it. Is there a way we can just create like a price per square footage, and then maybe we'd get a lot of people coming to us wanting to go ahead and buy these properties that we're never going to use anyway, and it could create a little bit of revenue?
Well, I believe there is a price per square foot, and maybe Mr. Climack, he knows that, I'm sure. Certainly the building inspector knows that. And so that's usually the initial bid is what that square footage is, and then sometimes it just stops right there. Most times it just stops right there, and that person gets that. But it was a rather unusual situation that we had a few months ago. I've not been through that, but it happens, I guess, once in a while.
Understood. It just seems that we have no real process for dealing with a situation that came up such as that one, and it's been brought to our attention now, and perhaps we should, you know, look at a way to have a solution for such a case. I don't know if this is the right solution, if it needs to be massaged more, but I do think that what happened was not right, and we should try and rectify something that will be right for next time, if there is a next time.
Any other questions or comments from the council?
Could we maybe table this and send it back for a little more?
Well, I suppose you have a motion to do that, but you want to talk in closer?
They can't hear you, Shirley.
I can't hear you. I was just wondering if we could possibly table this and send it back to you for a little bit clearer explanation. I'm just not quite following all of this.
Sure. I can do that. I'm not sure that there's clear direction from the council on how to massage that, but I could come up with a couple of options. That might be
better. I'm just not really going along with this at all, because I don't think it's giving the public enough leeway in buying property. And they want transparency. If we sell property to somebody that maybe they're the only bidder, then we're going to get a lot of flack from that. You know what I mean?
Let me just make a quick comment. I would like to just make the council make a decision on this tonight and not table it. Yeah. Council Member Connors.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Hansen, if we simply took out and transferred to the highest bidder, if we took out the word highest, you know, I'm not trying to be clever, but that we just transfer to a bidder and then we choose, does that eliminate the fact that we have to, transfer to the highest bidder?
Well, yeah, that would eliminate the transfer to the highest bidder, but if you're talking about transparency, then you have a bidding process, and somebody bids $10,000 and somebody bids $8,000, and then the council votes to give it to the person $8,000, I think you've done a lot worse disservice than you would under any other scenario I can imagine. So
It was T-ball. I was just serving you one up. No, thank you. And you want this decided this evening?
Yeah.
Well,
I'm not making a motion, though.
See, but there's six of us up here, Mayor. Excuse me if I may talk to you directly. And if we don't do anything, then it just stays the way it is. And if we table this until Councilmember Dunn comes back, then there will be a 4-3-5-2-6-1-7-0 vote. Mm-hmm. It'll be more definitive. It won't be left to politics. So I'd like to make a move to table this.
I second.
We have a motion and a second to table item number 7. Ms. Williams, on this motion to table, I would like to have a roll call vote.
Councilmember Connors?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Dowdy?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Klein?
Nay.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Early?
Nay. Motion passes 4-2. This item is tabled. Item number 8. Discussion and possible action on the petition from Linda Weiland for the mayor and council to establish a temporary task force to study and make recommendations concerning services to the chronically homeless population. We have three people signed up, it looks like, and we might as well start off with Ms. Linda Weiland.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. In 2014, in Arizona, according to the Housing and Urban Development website, there were 10,495 homeless persons in Arizona. And of those, 15% had chronic substance abuse problems, 15% severely mentally ill, and another 15% were victims of domestic violence. The reason that I brought this petition to the City Council is because of the recent shooting incident at the Safeway. I live in the San Jose area, also have property in the Don Luey area, and as part of the Don Luey Neighborhood Watch, we have been complaining to the police department about homeless encampments in the area of the Safeway. And basically, nothing was done, and a disaster ensued. So what I'm asking is that the City Council establish a limited time committee or task force to look at options to develop a policy on how to deal with the homeless population in a way that gives dignity to the individual, confidence to the police officers that they're doing things according to the procedure, and protects the policy, protects the community. I appreciate the information that was emailed to me, this resource guide for Cochise County, 50 some odd pages. That's a good start. It kind of identifies services that are available. This crisis protocol for Cochise County, I don't really know if this applies to the city also, but basically what I'm reading is the Simpatico protocol is kind of oriented at getting people institutionalized if they aren't willing to go for treatment. And it's mostly like a, seems like a paperwork kind of a thing. There's 9 different forms and a whole big process. And it still ends up with a problem, I think. One helpful thing it does talk about, there's a crisis mobile team that can be requested to meet with the person who's having the mental health crisis where they are, an attempt to engage the person in treatment voluntarily. But if that doesn't work, then it goes into the 9-step process to get them permanently institutionalized according to Arizona revised statutes. I think the city needs a procedure, and a procedure that would use volunteers, use the resources of other agencies, and benefit from the experience of other cities, rather than trying to invent something from new, kind of look and see what other places have done and learn from their experience. I found a resource on the internet, which I think Donna had emailed to you, and I had emailed to several of you all, that's from the Center for Problem-Oriented Policing of the New York State University. And it's a long guide, but it's very interesting because basically it talks about homelessness. It talks about how it's kind of almost a step-by-step process on how to identify the needs of the homeless, what things have worked in other cities, what works less well. So my thought was, to do nothing is just going to cause, it's more problems are going to develop. Right now, the homeless people have gone from the Safeway temporarily, but I'm sure there are other places and that they will come back. And it's not a cut and dried thing, you know, there shouldn't be a law against being homeless, but there should be a guideline that says, you know, this is the policy that we follow. And if it doesn't work and the person doesn't want to follow treatment and continues to be a disruptive influence in the community, what do we do next? So that's what I would like to see, is the city to put together a short-term committee to look at all these different resources and to see, you know, in reality, is there really a place, you know, once they go through the, does this crisis mobile team work? Is it Simpatico that's falling down on the job? Or does the process work and there's no places? Do we need to find more places? Do we need to look at building houses for these people, putting them in vacant houses, or what the options are? So I think you all got a copy of this. We emailed it to you, and I think there's some good information in there. And that was my thought. And thank you for putting it on the agenda.
You're welcome. Ms. Linda Weiland, thank you. Next, we have Donna Pauline.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I won't take up much more of your time. Linda pretty much covered it all, and I think a task force made up of professionals in the social services community, the police department, city staff, council, maybe 6-7 members that would all, could look up the resources that are already available. This University of Albany Center for Problem-Oriented Policing is an excellent resource. Those are the downloads that I gave you all on your email, and I strongly recommend that you look at them because they have studied this, they have looked at the problem, they have statistics to follow the problem and solutions, suggested solutions in dealing with it. And I will just read briefly one paragraph from this. This specifically talks about mental illness. It's important to recognize at the outset that mental illness is not, in and of itself, a police problem. Obviously, it is a medical and social services problem. However, a number of the problems caused by or associated with mental illness often do become police problems. These include crime, suicides, disorder, and a variety of calls for service. Moreover, the traditional police response to people with mental illness has been often ineffective and sometimes tragic. So I think it's worth our while to look at how we want to use our resources of the police department. And these people have studied this, and I think it's a good idea for us to look at what their recommendations are. Thanks.
Thank you, Donna Pulling. Next, we have former council member Benny Scott.
Good evening, council. Benny Scott. I live on 513 Harrison Street, Bisbee, Arizona. Ever since our last block watch meeting, we discussed this. And ever since that discussion, I've been in that pasture behind Safeway once a week. I was in it last Thursday. I was in it yesterday. And I understand that some of these people do have a mental problem. And working with the police department for 27 years, you have a mental problem. And I do believe there are crisis centers. The problem is, you can get him. You get him to the hospital. He gets evaluated. They say put him in PUF, which is no longer there anymore. He says, I'll do it. He signs his name. He walks in the door, and he walks back out the same afternoon. You cannot force him to stay in there. It takes a judge to force that man to stay in that crisis center. And I'll admit, there's a bunch of them needs to be in there. Now, yesterday I walked all of that. Found a bunch of old camps. We had one person in there. I'll tell you who he is, Angel Ramirez. And he's wandering around, and we talked to him about getting some help. And he told us, I have access. I don't need help. What are we going? And then he told us where we were going. Oh, yes. In so many words. What are you going to do? You're going to grab this kid the minute you touch him. He wasn't really dumb either. He started talking about the First Amendment right off the bat. He knew right what he could say and what he couldn't. And the trouble is, one thing about it, we did find some of his the other camps, and they're vacant right now. Most likely they've headed towards Colorado. You know, things are a little bit better up in Colorado. The smoke is greener. But come wintertime, there will be a few of them come back. But tonight we had a block watch meeting, and we talked also with the people that run the homeless shelter. Now, they're starting to do things a lot different also. And I got to give them credit. Number one, they're feeding them better, which means they're not wandering around. We have the church groups that are putting on the dinners and lunches up in the park up in Old Bisbee. So some of these people aren't really wandering around. Some of these people that are hanging around Safeway have homes. You want their names? I have them.
Let's not do the names. I
won't give
you
the names,
about
but
that.
We all know them. The little gentleman that walks all over that park with a cell phone lives right here in Warren. Yep, he's not homeless. The others aren't homeless. They ride the bus down to Safeway, get in front of the building because it's shady, get a beer. We found one yesterday that had a Clamato sitting out under a mesquite bush. Got on his bike and went back home, and he lives down in San Jose. You know, I believe there is, we need to do something. I don't know how to go about it. This little gentleman that just we met yesterday, he has a home tonight. He got in some trouble. But I asked him, why are you here? And he says, well, I'm here because I'm grieving. The grieving process is over. I mean, it's done out there. And we couldn't talk to him. Tried to talk to him. He wasn't going to listen to us. And we offered him services. Ask him if he was hungry, we'd feed him. No. So what do you do if somebody doesn't want it? And his little house, which is was kind of neat, all of his beer cans were in one pile anyway. His little blankets over here and his little eating apparatus over here. But it's all on private property. It wasn't on city property. And the man that owns the private property is letting him stay there. Now what do we do? Nothing. And one other thing. While standing around, we watched a brand new car come down, leave property right next to a dumpster, and one of the guys from the homeless shelter come walking around, picks it up, and goes out on down the road. It was a setup. They knew they were coming, and they dropped stuff off for them. So you have people also that's supporting these people. And I don't know what you're going to do. I mean, right now it's kind of quiet. There's nobody out there. Maybe tomorrow. But I don't think, you know, we don't need a police officer walking through there every day. There's got to, and I'll be honest with you, I don't have all the answers. And probably if they get a big freeze back east, they'll be here this winter time. But you're not going to lock them up. You can't. It's not against the law to be a vagrant. It's not against the law to be homeless. Thank you.
Thank you, former Councilmember Benny Scott. Just a few comments. I was also out there yesterday. I was the other part of Benny's we, and I didn't know what I was going to find, and we spent at least an hour, maybe longer, walking in that whole area. And I only saw one place, and as he mentioned, it was on private property. There were actually no trespassing signs, and there was nobody there, and actually it was fairly cleaned up. It was actually fairly tidy. I saw no tents. I saw some camps, probably individual camps, that had maybe been abandoned a month ago, 2 months ago. It wasn't, not new, let's put it like that. I don't know how long it takes till it looks old, but I don't want the city to get a reputation that we are going to roust out homeless people. However, there's another side of the coin. Sometimes it makes certain citizens nervous in the area when they leave their home, if there's homeless in that. But as far as San Jose, and we're focusing on San Jose tonight, and I didn't see a problem out there. I saw nobody in any of those camps. I just saw one place where somebody might be staying some of the time, maybe just in the daytime. I don't know. I did not see a problem there as of right now, but once again, I wasn't out there 3 months ago or 6 months ago. So as far as having a task force or a city, another board committee or commission, I cannot ask the staff and the clerk's office to oversee another one. They're doing 21 right now. And it's kind of like setting it up for a council session with all the various boards, committees, and commissions. And it's like overload on them. So I'm not in favor of that. However, I think the block watches are a good avenue to go down. I think if there is a problem, you need to report it to the police department. And they will address that in the way they need to address it. But once again, as former Councilmember Scott said, it's not illegal to be homeless. And so we must always be cognizant of that fact. And I think we also need to assist them in various ways that we can. My estimate's about 15%, just like the lifestyle. They just want to be homeless. But I think the vast majority, there are some personal problems that they have. And I've been out in the community talking. I talk to a lot of people about a lot of different issues. And this one is about the community's heart. And it's a very, very delicate issue. And some people are become homeless, and they live that lifestyle for various reasons, alcohol, drug problems, perhaps mental issues, whatever it might be. And their self-esteem goes down and down and down. And they, in my opinion, they become then afraid to actually go to some sort of a governmental office that they can actually seek help. So there, I believe there needs to be a reach out, but it has to be done very, very delicately, because these people, in my opinion, are right on the fringe. And it's a sad situation. I don't want to see anybody homeless. And I want to see this community have a heart and address it in any way that we can to assist these people. And I know some people that have been homeless, and I talk to them, and they have risen out of it. But they might have had just a little more strength, a little more knowledge to know where to go get help. And this is the avenues that I want to move into. And I think the block watches are absolutely imperative to this process, because it's right there in the neighborhood. And
Mayor?
So that's my comments. Councilmember Connors?
Thank you very much, Mayor. I know for a fact that people do not choose to be homeless when they're suffering from a disease. And I can speak to that in private directly if you'd like. And just speaking for myself, I'd be more than willing to work with you on something unofficial, whatever I could do to help. Thanks, Mayor.
Councilmember Hansen.
You know, I appreciate all the comments so far, but I think this is something that we do need to address. And I do have one question for Chief Enchevis. Is there any type of policy for homeless as to how you approach them? And
Mayor, Council, staff, there's no written policy on how we deal with homeless individuals. The only policy I could address is the fact that, you know, we try to deal with and approach every person with the same level of respect and dignity that we would expect to approach anybody else with, their status or their living arrangements aside. We expect our officers to approach people in that manner.
I really think that the idea of a task force is a good idea, because I think it brings the appropriate people together to take a look at the problem. Because I went through what was attached, and I'm very familiar with Sympatico. And unless you know how to do it, they're not going to do it. I mean, they just don't know about it. And as far as the crisis, and yes, it gives you all kinds of different places that you can go for help, but how do you get that to the people? And like you were talking about, an outreach program, and I think that would be one of the things that would be wonderful for, and I keep pointing at you because you brought it up, and I appreciate, Linda, that you have brought this to our attention, because I think this is something that our community really needs, because there's several aspects to this. It's to help the individual, and it's also to keep the community safe. And I think having a task force with those people, and I, like Councilman Connors, would be more than happy to help out with that. So that's all.
Well, let's define what a task force is. I'm not sure. Would that be a city task force? What would that be? That would meet city officials, would be on, not city officials, but the public would be on the task force, and the city clerk's office has to maintain that and keep records and all that type of stuff. I'm not sure what a task force would entail, I guess, was my question.
You know what? It could be anything that we want it to be. If we want to have, Ms. Whalen would like to set up something and that we have a liaison from the committee, we can do it in an informal manner. And I don't know, how much does it take to go through for the city, you know, to have a task force?
Quite frankly, it's an effort to put together an official committee, whether it's ad hoc or whatever the case may be. Okay. Now, that's not to say that, you know, Ms. Winland and Ms. Pulling, if you want to pull together the resources associated with such a task force, whether it is someone from the county, whether it is, you know, Chief Achave, whether it is someone from the fire department, that doesn't mean that we won't participate. It takes the official out of an official task force. You know, government, we want to be, you know, good stewards of the public money. We want to be a resource for folks, but we can't do everything. And I think having, you know, the input from folks as we start to develop and revamp our police policy, I think it's helpful to have individuals in the community that can help guide or help create that particular section of our police manual. In my mind, I think that's a better use of the staff's time and the resources because, as the mayor pointed out, we have over 20 committees. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it's easy for those that don't get a chance to peek behind the curtain to see the level of efforts associated with pulling together a committee, pulling together minutes. It's not, you know, a cakewalk. And so I'm glad you gave me that opportunity to speak to that. But there are other groups that have gotten together and the city has been involved. When we think about what Sergeant Long is doing with his community groups and the level of input that they provide and the resource that they are for him, and bringing it back to the department is very fruitful and beneficial. So I think something unofficial that's not a city committee mm-hmm. is a much better use of the staff's time, but at the end of the day, we'll get the same result going forward.
Just a comment. I want to pay a credence to Councilmember Hansen's statement. I live in an area of Bisbee where I don't have a homeless situation near my house, and I would dare say that if there were 15 people or 20 people camped out pretty near my house, I might be a little nervous, a little bit concerned about getting in my car and going away for an afternoon or an evening or a vacation for a week or so. So I understand that. So there's two sides to the situation, and there has to be a balance. So I recognize the concern that Ms. Weiland and Ms. Pulling have. Maybe that could emanate solutions. But with those individuals, you have to deal with them very delicately, or they'll just clam up essentially and disappear. But it is a situation that will be growing in America, in my opinion, and I think in some areas it's massive. But I'm not of the view that we ban homelessness, and some cities are actually doing that. And I think that's pretty heartless, actually. But it is a concern that probably needs to be recognized. Although what I saw in San Jose yesterday. Didn't look like there was any problem there at all, essentially.
Can I respond to that?
Yes.
It's June, Mayor, and most of them have gone north. Next winter, you're going to see them. Just 3 or 4 months ago, the number that were back there. And I know that I've had several people talk to me about the number of people back there, the trash, the whole situation back there. So right now is really not a good judge as to how many people are actually back there, because it is a cyclic. It's a seasonal. When it's warm here and cold someplace else, this is where a lot of them will come.
Councilmember Connors.
Thank you, Mayor. Those people are our residents here too, whether they're seasonal or not. Those people deserve the amount of time that we're considering those other people that pay taxes in order to invite them in to be part of an auction process for city property. And those people need as much time and energy as it takes for these people to spend on that problem. So I think that those people deserve the amount of attention that we're giving them and more. And I think that it was brilliant that we can do this, and it doesn't have to be a city sanctioned task force. It doesn't have to be anything. The city can keep itself clean of having anything other than wanting to participate and see what you bring to us. If you want our to sign off on something, or you want us to adopt something as a body, bring something to us like you already have. You know, this is what's going on in another part of the country with those people. And I can't state it enough. Those people don't choose. Their behaviors kind of on the perception, those people behave and those people choose to be the way they are because of their behavior. But it's more than that. It's more than that. If those people had a choice, they would choose not to live that way. They would choose not to drink that way. They would choose not to drug that way. They would choose to behave and be part of society as best they could. But those people need my help, our help. And I think to deny, to want to not have to be culpable, or not culpable, but responsible with city assets to pay for a task force, to pay, to, you know, to do anything other than let's just get this thing started. Let's see how it begins to deal with those people. And I couldn't think of something more better. My English teacher would kill me. I think it's a great idea to start unofficially and then work it into policy. And this is what we do for our citizens in Bisbee. We sell their property at the highest dollar amount we can, and we take care of our own, our homeless, everybody. We take care of our cops, we take care of our police, we take care of our citizens, and we take care of the most vulnerable people in our society, old people, babies, and the mentally ill. Those people I want to be part of. Thank you.
I appreciate those comments, Councilmember Connors. Any other questions or comments from the council?
I have one comment.
Councilmember Sullivan.
I just really appreciate Mrs. Weiland bringing this up for our consideration, and I definitely feel that as a city we do have some responsibility to be a major part in finding some solutions for these people, and certainly I don't want it to burden our staff any more than we already have, but I think this is something we need to not let just blow into the wind, but we need to be proactive in figuring out what we can do as far as helping the task force come together. I don't know what that looks like, but I definitely support it. So,
I want to thank City Attorney Mr. Hansen for giving us that information. I appreciated that very much. I suppose, is there any more comments or questions from the council? Anybody else have any further statements? What I would recommend is what we'll do is we will, I would hope that the whatever it is, task force or whatever we might call it, would come out of the various block watches. I know there's two of those in San Jose. And those people are, know more about it because they live there. And so I think that is where we would start at. But it's a very delicate situation. And I did appreciate what Councilmember Connor said. Very eloquent. Thank you. And so they are our people, too. So I really don't have anything else to say. But what I would do now for action is, because we have to take some action, I would like to file this and for further reference. And I don't know if the block watches have agendas. Maybe they do. I don't know. I mean, I've been to them, but I can't remember. I think one did one time, and so this might be Chief Achave.
Yes, Sergeant Long does provide or develop an agenda for the meetings. He tries to keep them as formalized as possible and right at the hour mark.
Okay.
So it is something that we could put on an agenda for his up and coming block watch meetings.
Okay, thank you. So I think that's the way we'll proceed. Councilmember Hansen.
Is there any reason why we cannot authorize a citizen task force?
Well, I think maybe the city attorney can help me out. It seems if we authorize something, it's part of the city government.
That's correct. Then you'll own it, and you'll be responsible for making sure that it meets Felt Open Meeting laws, et cetera, et cetera. So either you authorize it or you follow the direction that it sounds like several of the council members want to, which is a more informal approach. Obviously, that's the full council's choice. So.
Yeah, that's my approach. And what I would suggest to the Block Watch, if it's possible, you might invite one of the homeless people to be a part of that process at the Block Watch discussion, involved. And sometimes a little thing like that will elevate them up, and their dignity and self-worth dramatically increases. And so that's just a suggestion to the San Jose Block Watches.
Okay.
I don't think that the block watch is the place to go. I don't think that's the solution. And just saying, this is just a San Jose problem. I don't agree with that either. This is a community problem, and I will be more than happy to help you guys to put together something on an unofficial basis, because I think this is something that needs to be identified. We need to come up with a policy, operating procedure, whatever, so that, I mean, the resources are out there, but we don't get them to the right people. And if they don't take advantage of them, they don't take advantage of them. But we as a community can say we're trying. We're trying to help the situation. And I certainly hope that we can get someone from the police department to be on that.
Well, yes, we will support however we can. And just to add to the to that side of things, getting that help and getting that information out there, you know, part of what we do when we respond to situations when dealing with somebody who's having a mental crisis, whether it be the suicidal or some type of mental deficiency, we reach out to those Sympatico and the CIA resources. NurseWise is a very useful tool that we use on a regular basis. So it only takes one or two contacts from a police officer to be involved with some of these people, and that the resources are utilized and they're pointed in that direction. As Mr. Scott said, there's some people that choose not to go that route, and there are some very difficult guidelines that have to be met to forcibly detain somebody for a psychological evaluation. And without meeting that criteria and getting a judge to sign off, it does become very difficult. And even once that does happen, it's only for a short amount of time. And then they're evaluated, sometimes medicated, brought back to a more normal state, and they're released back out again. As Mr. Scott pointed out, numerous times in my career I can speak to, I've taken people for an evaluation, and the mobile response team has responded, and these people have agreed to voluntary treatment. And once that happens, once they make that agreement, it kind of stops everything else. And they're either taken to a facility or arrangements are made. And if they change their mind, they change their mind, and it starts the whole process over again. And that's not really a procedural thing that the city or myself have any, we don't have any control over that. You know, that's the powers that be. Mr. Hansen's office has provided training for the Title 36 process. I think the last one was less than a year ago. His office came here to the council chambers and provided training to not only Bisbee police officers but also City of Douglas on this process. And you know, they're a resource that we look to in this these types of situations. But we do push that information out there. We have cards that we carry that have the number for NurseWise in it that we can hand to people so they can call. If they're not having a crisis right now, they can use it later. We push that information out there as much as we can. Is there specifically a policy directing us that route? No, there's not, but situations when dealing with those type of patients, the fire department and ambulance is not always the right avenue, and that's when we make those calls to that crisis line. And they do send out a mobile response team. In fact, we used it just 2 days ago. You know, sometimes it's effective. Sometimes it's an ongoing process. We have to keep going over and over again.
It's good to hear that there is at least some informal process there, and that outreach is being done by the police.
Yes,
but
ma'am.
I think that if we could take a look at it and get more, the more eyes we can get on it, maybe we can come up with something. Maybe not, but I think we owe it to the community to do that.
Any other comments, questions from the council? So at this point in time, thank you, Chief.
Yes.
At this point in time, I think that we will file this for reference, and maybe the council members from the San Jose ward, you know, keep on top of that a little bit. And I will try to as well. And Councilmember Hansen and Connors are both interested in this, along with Councilmember Sullivan. It's a serious issue. It's a human issue. It's an important issue. And I have no more comments to make on that. Any other comments? Let's go to the city manager's report.
Thank you, Mayor. Very quickly, I sent out an email on yesterday, just wanting to get your thoughts associated with adjusting the schedule associated for City Hall, and if you all have any comments or thoughts. As you can tell tonight, it's relatively warm in this building, and it's oftentimes pretty challenging for some of our employees in various departments and levels within this building. So it wasn't a comfortable work environment, just to be perfectly candid with you. So, you know, the thought was, hey, you know, can we do this during the summer months, beginning next week, going to a Monday through Thursday schedule, yet extending the hours that the public will have access to making payments or visiting a building official or myself or human resources or whatever the case may be, and also sent a list of other communities in the state just to, as a frame of reference for you all, and so I appreciate you commenting on that. Also wanted to point out that OpenGov is live on the city's website. It's on the left-hand side under the transparency section. So there you'll find the platform itself for you all to go in and start kind of playing around with. There's a landing page, and the link to access the financials is at the bottom for a reason, so that, you know, those that are looking to get an idea of how to use this thing, the directions are there. So the goal and the hope is to have people go through the instructions, read through the landing page, and get an idea of how to use it. It also includes the monthly financials, which are there and they're available right now. So I just wanted to point that out as well. This past weekend, we had a public auction. Thank you to the chief for facilitating that. Through that process, we netted over $6,000. We got rid of a lot of stuff that we've been holding on to. So thank you, Mayor and Council, for allowing us to dispose of that. And that $6,000 is certainly quite beneficial to us. And to Ms. Wyland's point, you know, after this meeting, I'd love to get together with you and we can sit down and set a date so that we can go ahead and get going. Obviously, the direction from Mayor and Council is for us to try to be a part of the solution. And so please, Don't leave too quickly so we can get a date set and go in and get the ball rolling, because we are in the midst of updating our police manual. So I'd love to, let's just go ahead and move forward, you know, with it. And last but not least, I think I'm going to relocate for this one. So it's kind of a surprise for some of y'all. Chief. As you all know, for the last, since February of this year, Interim Chief Achave has served as the Interim Police Chief for the Bisbee Police Department. One of the major challenges that he's had to face is addressing the culture within our department. Not only has he been proactive in addressing the issue, he's been open-minded in finding solutions, and he's been willing to extend a hand to other agencies associated with his line of work. And it's very interesting for me to have someone that's been a part of a department for 17 years and to just pick his brain and to hear what he has to offer and the solutions that he's had in his back pocket for years, and to be able to pull those solutions to fruition and make things happen. And he has commanded the respect, not through force, through intimidation, but by being open and transparent and approachable. That's certainly the culture in which I'm working and hoping to create here in the city of Bisbee, and it certainly is a reflection of not only his leadership qualities, his skill set, upbringing, obviously, came from a good home. Now, with all that said, I wanted to take this opportunity to acknowledge and recognize that as of tonight, we're pulling the interim tag off of his title, and he, starting tomorrow, when we put together that personnel action form, he will be the new chief for the Bisbee Police Department. So with that said, I want to present Chief. Come on here. He's got some 4 stars and a chief insignia that he can put on his collar, and I'm very proud of him. I'm excited about the direction of the department and where we're going. So, Chief.
speech.
I'd like to thank everybody, and Mr. Johnson, I appreciate the opportunity to continue to move forward with the agency. I'd like to thank my lovely wife sitting in the audience, and of course, to the upbringing that Mr. Johnson mentioned, my mother sitting in the audience as well, for all their support and dedication, and I do appreciate it. And to the we're going to keep working forward, or moving forward, and working to make things just a little bit better every day. And we've done good things, and I look forward to continue to do more good things. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief.
And that's all I have, Mayor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Next, we'll go to council comments. Councilmember Hansen.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to speak a little bit about the Urban Land Institute that came into town, rolled into town, actually, and kind of took a view of Bisbee in a whole. And I wanted to thank Stan Stern and the iBisbee Committee for making that happen. If you did not get a chance to listen to the panel, it was very exciting. A lot of people felt that, we didn't really learn anything new. And I have to disagree. If nothing, it pulled everything together. Because, yes, some people were thinking this and some people were thinking this. Now we've got all those ideas in one bucket. And it also, I was very impressed with the fact that the committee or the panel had really done their homework. And this wasn't a canned presentation that could be used across the country in any city. This was modified for Bisbee. And one of the things that they said is Bisbee is unique. And you need to keep that uniqueness, which I don't think anyone will disagree with. But they also said you have the potential for economic development. You need to start small and with something doable. You need to focus. You need to find out what your audience is. Lost my notes here. And the last thing is that bottom line is, unless we do something, we are not going to be able to sustain this beautiful city of Bisbee the way that we know it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Klein?
Okay. Since on at this portion we can suggest future agenda items for Mr. Hansen. I think we've taken the steps or are trying to take steps in order to make those transfers and things like that. But I think in just some of the discussion that we had at the time, I don't think we have a clear picture of what our fire department does. And Councilmember Sullivan was concerned about response time, and as well as we all should be concerned about response time. I know the other night we were told it was an 8-minute response time, but it really isn't 8 minutes. It does take quite a bit longer, and if you're coming from Station 191 to Naco Highway, it's 12.9 miles. You cannot drive that at regular speed or even slightly over in 8 minutes. It does take longer. And if we have backup, which we're very grateful for the backup, don't get me wrong. It was very beneficial on the Boris fire, and we're very happy about that. But if they do have to come from Station 193, you're going to have to tack on 6.7 miles more. So there are issues like that, response time. And those are things that we can work on. But I would just like to have some, maybe a work session in which we can have and mostly to inform us, as mayor and council, to inform us as to what operations really are for the fire department. It's not just a matter of, picking somebody up and taking them to the hospital and then dropping them off and being gone. There are many other things that are involved in that. And I just, so anyway, I just think it would be helpful just to have a work session so we can be educated on what all is involved. And I'm sure that, you know, we could probably get some of the firefighters, I would hope, of course, to come out. And if we have those questions, they'll be here to answer them. So I guess I would like to request at this time that, because we kind of have that long lull until our next meeting, if we couldn't have maybe a work session in about 2 weeks, just an informational, educational work session. And, you know, and the thing is, you know, we're taking some steps, but, you know, this is, it's a temporary arrangement. So what do we need in moving forward? What do we need you know, this will help us right now. We have a year on the, you know, contract or, you know, agreement. So what happens after that year? Do we try to branch out a little more on our own? Do we continue with what we're doing? I think if we have a little bit of a direction as to what's involved in everything, we might have a clearer picture. So would it be possible, Mayor, to request a work session in 2 weeks?
Tell Nina tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever you want.
Okay. Thank you. And I know it seems really early, you know, to be wishing everybody a safe and happy 4th of July, but we do have that long span, and we won't have a regular meeting before then. So, again, this is one of the biggest holidays for the city of Bisbee. Everybody comes in for their family reunions, for their class reunions, and with, you know, how the 4th of July falls, we're going to have an awful lot of people in town. So I would just, welcome everybody home and hope that they all have a good time. And, again, just be mindful of fireworks. Things are dry out there. We did get some rain tonight, but things are dry out there. It is wildland season. So please be careful with your fireworks and, you know, help our firefighters and our police officers out. You know, just be mindful of things like that. And just, you know, have a safe and happy 4th of July, and please be careful. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. This meeting is adjourned. Albert is out of here.